Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. It's a really interesting show today, I gotta say. We're covering the gamut here. Are traditional weddings not your thing? Some people prefer something a little simpler, maybe even a little less expensive. We're gonna take a look at this sharing economy model for weddings. The Pop-Up Channel Co. is trying to reinvent the way Canadians host weddings. I'm going to speak to Lindsay Kent, the owner of the company and founder of the company, about how she works. Then it is very, very clear that many Canadians are struggling with their mental health right now, but having access to mental health services does not come easily. Morneau Chappell recently partnered with Shoppers Drug Mart to give customers access to its mental health programs. It also has made its key product available for free in Ontario and Manitoba, thanks to the support of the provincial governments there. It is called Ability CBT, and Nigel Branker from Morneau Chappell will be here to talk about it. If you're an older adult or a caregiver to an older adult, it can be really stressful just getting simple tasks done, right? Running errands, getting help around the house. NeighborForce is a service that connects older adults to people willing to help from the community. Now, it's not available in Canada, but I love the idea so much I wanted to talk about it. I'll speak to its founder, Paige Wilson. Then, you can't have wealth without your health. Ooh, that's good. Oblix is a new life planning app that helps you plan out your financial future, but also allowing you to visualize life's milestones at the very same time, like, you know, health things and all that stuff. I'll speak to Michael Meyer about how all that comes together. Plus, our blogger spotlight is on Freedom 35. The writer behind that blog is Liquid Independence. He says it has nothing to do with booze. I don't believe him. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Let's get started. So many Canadians are struggling with mental health challenges as this pandemic rolls on and on and on. And sometimes those challenges are the effect of tough financial circumstances. And sometimes mental health itself can be the cause of tough financial circumstances. Whether it's cause or effect, it is clear that more needs to be done. Morneau Chappell is an HR services company. It recently partnered with Shoppers Drug Mart and two provincial governments here in Canada to help Canadians gain access to mental health programs through something it calls Ability CBT. Joining us now to talk about it is Nigel Branker. He is president of Health and Productivity Solutions at Morneau Chappell. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Ability CBT is what you call internet-based cognitive behavior therapy, or CBT. First off, what's CBT? How do you describe that acronym?
Great question. So CBT stands for, as you mentioned, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it really looks at the fact that there's a linkage between how we think, cognitive, how we feel, and how we act. And those three dimensions set up patterns for us as human beings. And so if I'm worried about being run down and contracting COVID-19, I may stay up all night worrying about that, in which case I further run myself down, which makes me more stressed, and then the cycle feeds on itself. So cognitive behavioral therapy is an approach to helping people to get past situations that are bothering them and helping them build the skills so that they can go forth and be productive in the future and recognize these patterns when they start to occur.
And historically, CBT would have been delivered in a very traditional one-on-one therapeutic environment. It seems to be an approach that has more measurables behind it, almost a more specific process than maybe Gestalt or other modes of therapy. But tell us about how this can work on the internet.
CBT is a very structured approach to psychotherapy, and it breaks things into really bite-sized bits that you, and certainly in our program, that can you work with a therapist. So the nature of, you know, building a foundation of understanding your triggers, understanding how you react to certain triggers, building a foundation of self-care, understanding your thought patterns. You know, CBT really lends itself to a structured pace where a lot of the work, you don't have to do it with a therapist, you know, with you or watching you. You can do it in your own time. You can do it for 15 minutes after you put the kids to bed. You can do it on your smartphone, or you can look at a video on breathing and practice your breathing. So it really lends itself to you doing a fair bit on your own in a really, you know, structured program, programmatic way, with a therapist there to support you every step of the way.
Tell us about that therapist support, because they are not, it's not like you get in a Zoom call once a week with this person. There's no couch, metaphorical or otherwise. How is that therapist involved as the treatment unfolds?
Well, as the treatment unfolds, the therapists, and we really empower our therapists as the largest provider of mental health services. We have the largest therapist network in Canada. So we empower our therapists to work individually with each client. So the way our program works is you would complete an assessment. It takes you about 5 minutes. You'd be assigned a therapist. You meet with the therapist for that first meeting. The therapist just then asks you a few questions, ensures that you're appropriate for the program, and then you work with the therapist to figure out what works best with you. So some people say, I don't want to talk to a therapist. I don't want a regular appointment. I'm just going to work through the workbooks. In which case the therapist sends you additional articles, will send you a text and just check in and said, hey, Bruce, I noticed you're stuck on module 2. Everything okay? Anything I can help with? And so they're really there to help support you for people who want to be sort of lighter touch. Many people, though, take advantage of saying, well, you know what? I actually would love to have a touch base for 15 minutes a week by video conference and reflect on the things I'm going through in the module and maybe ask some other questions. So we really leave it. And that's, I think, one of the big things in providing a digital therapy program to meet people where they are and to provide them with the latitude to figure out what works with them, with their therapist as a guide.
Now, the other digital program out there that people may have heard of, I've talked about in the past, is called Beacon. They don't have a live voice. It is entirely based on text, as far as I understand it. What are some other similarities and differences versus other interventions that people might be able to access?
I think there are a number of differences, but I would build on my earlier point that Morner Chappell, being the largest EAP provider in Canada, the largest provider of mental health and well-being services, we have a massive therapist network. So what that means is we can connect with via video, via telephone, anytime, no problem at all. As well, one major difference is we're always screening for crisis support. So I think last year we helped 30,000 Canadians, and about 20% of them screened in crisis. And if someone screens in crisis, we will not direct you to 911. We will get a crisis counselor on the line with you immediately. We will understand the issue. We will get you the right support. We will work with our provincial partners. So I think it's just some of the depth and breadth that comes from being an established mental health player versus more of a startup and having that network that we can rely on.
And some of our listeners might be familiar with the employee assistance program services that Morneau Chappell has been offering, feels like since the beginning of time, but probably not since fire was invented, but a long time. That has been a part of your business for a very long time.
I think getting on 40 years. So
yeah, that's a long time. Now, let's draw the link between financial issues and mental health. You're someone who has a background in both, right? Which is not that common. What is the connection here? I endeavor to make the connection regularly and beat this drum here, but let me pass the baton to you.
Sure. Well, there are two connections I would draw between mental health and financial health and financial well-being. The first is, you know, coming out of COVID-19, we developed a mental health index and we tracked statistics on the overall health and mental health and well-being of Canadians. And we saw a marked decline in the last 12 months. We're really being challenged with a series of events that are taking its toll on our mental health and well-being. When we look at the scores, what we will see is that the people that struggle the most are, and this is things you've talked about for a while, people who don't have emergency savings, or people with young kids, or people who have seen a reduction in salary and hours. So as a stressor, financial stress is one of the most prominent stressors that can erode mental health and well-being. So I would say that's one point. The second point is, it links a bit to our program, but it's something you touch on all the time as well. You know, looking back at my days in the financial space, we go through and we ask people about saving for retirement, and we recognize that people choose, like, saving for retirement is a choice between consumption today and consumption in the future. And it's a lot easier to choose consumption today. It's the same reason I may not go to the gym today, but I'll plan on going to the gym tomorrow. We discount future events. And I think it's really, and how you overcome that is you pay yourself first, you set up a plan, you get a personal trainer for the gym. It's the same with mental health in our program, right? The way we're wired, we'd rather get a massage than get therapy. It sounds really scary and it sounds like something we'll do tomorrow. And so what our program tries to do is actually build on those principles to say, let's make it automatic, let's make it easy, let's remove some of the barriers, knowing that it's not our first instinct to help ourselves for something that's so important as long-term mental health.
Access to this kind of resource is so important. As I mentioned off the top, you have relationships with the provincial governments in Ontario and Manitoba. I understand that makes it free access in those two provinces. How does it work in other parts of the country?
So in other parts of the country, we recently partnered with Shoppers Drug Mart to offer that through their PC Health app and through their stores, through their pharmacists on a discounted basis. So if you're not in Ontario or Manitoba, it's offered for free. If you're in other provinces, you can get a discounted rate through Shoppers Drug Mart as well. If your employer has group benefit plans, it's likely covered under your group benefit plan.
And what is the discounted price at Shoppers?
The discounted price at Shoppers is $400 an hour, $400 a session rather.
And a session can last over the course of months.
Yeah, we target a session being over a 10-week period, but we don't enforce that. You can take as long as you want. Right. We just think that to go through 10 modules at a reasonable pace, it's probably a module a week. But yes,
right.
You're correct.
When I hear the word session, I think it's like a personal training session. $400 for one personal training session is a lot of money. But you're saying it's the course of treatment.
For the entire course of treatment, however long it takes.
Yeah. What do you have in terms of results? One thing that your company trades in is metrics. You've got your mental health index, you've got your financial health. Like you folks know numbers. You've got actuaries, you know numbers. How can you quantify the efficacy of Ability CBT?
Great question. So yes, we have lots of data. If I take one of our programs, for example, our anxiety program, and we base it on the GAD-7 screening, when someone comes into our program, you know, we do that initial assessment and we'll see if you screen at mild or moderate or severe. And if you're mild, you know, I'm not feeling myself, I'm kind of curious about this program, you might score something like a 6 or 7. And by the end of our program, you'd be down to a 5 or a 4. So the program will help a bit in mild. But where the program really shines is if you're moderate or severe. If you're really struggling, and most of our users will say, you know, I didn't feel like myself more than half the time, right? Whether it's my interactions with my family, whether it's my productivity at work, whether it's my ability to sleep. So in those cases, if you're more moderate or severe, we see, you know, we'll over the course of our program, you'll move from an 18 down to a 7 or an 8. So more than a 50% improvement in clinical symptomology.
Wow. I want to give voice to probably the most common yeah, but on a program like this. And that would be, yeah, but it's not putting an extra $2,000 in my bank account every month. It's not helping me pay the mortgage, right? How do you address that yeah, but and encourage people that actually an alteration in how they think could then alter their circumstances?
Great comment. And I'll come back to my earlier point about and the analogy of paying yourself first. So, you know, with a program like this, typically we see three big barriers around accessing the program. So the number one barrier tends to be cost, and we try to overcome that in our partnerships with the governments. The number two and three barriers are around access, and the number three is about stigma. And we sometimes feel like some of the yeah, but is actually, you know, more of a way of expressing stigma. This is not for me. In fact, we recently did a survey of our users and 50% of people said, my mental health is fine. I'm just struggling with all these symptoms. I'm not sleeping well. I'm having more drugs or substance. I'm more angry with my children. I'm more irritable, but otherwise my mental health is fine. So it is this idea of, I think to your point, you're going to be, whatever field you're in, whatever you're doing, you're going to be more successful, more productive, more financially successful, the more you're your best self. And mental health can really be a drain that holds you back on being your best possible self. And that's where the return as an individual on a program like this shows up.
Really helpful stuff, Nigel. Thank you for your time today.
Pleasure, Bruce. Thank you so much.
Nigel Branker is president of health and productivity solutions at Morneau Chapelle. He was here to talk about their internet-based cognitive behavioral therapy program. It's called Ability CBT.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
If you have an older loved one in your life, whether you are an active and primary caregiver or just someone who receives their calls and questions about how to properly send a text on their phone, you know how stressful it can be as people age, right? But what if there were people in your community, in their community, willing to help out? That is the idea behind an organization called NeighborForce. It connects older adults to community members who can provide care, but also companionship, from helping around the house to running errands, all that kind of stuff. Joining us now to talk about how the service works is Paige Wilson. She is the founder of NeighborForce, and she joins us from Richmond, Virginia. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. How are you?
You don't currently operate in Canada, but I still wanted to do this interview. I wanted to have this conversation because I think it's so helpful for us to think about how we support our seniors differently. Tell us what inspired you to start NeighborForce in the first place.
Sure. You know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. Well, several years ago, my 78-year-old mother broke her hip. And I had a demanding career in investment banking. I was widowed young, raising a teenage daughter, and trying to support my mom. She lived 5 minutes away, and I loved her to pieces. But it was all those little things that you just said. The big one that I had was reprogramming the remote.
I have driven 2 hours to do that very thing for my mother.
Yeah, exactly. And next week you have that call again. And yeah. So what I quickly found was, you know, she did not need an aide or a nurse. This was not a healthcare issue. These were just all these little things that kept her happy, independent in her home. And so I realized there's really just a huge void. You're either fully independent and you can rely on your family. And then there's nothing until you need an aide or a nurse. And so after she passed away, I started looking for a solution.
And what is that solution as you see it and in terms of what you've created?
Sure. Well, you know, as I started to do the research, I'm a finance person. So all of the data around aging demographics was new to me. But, you know, the first thing is 11,000 baby boomers are turning 65 every day.
Wow.
And in the next decade, the number of people over 65 is growing by almost 50% and tripling in the next three decades. It's called sometimes the silver tsunami, or as the gerontologists have corrected me, the age wave. Mm. And so obviously there are all these older people aging. And by the way, I'm the tail end of the baby boomers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, aging, there's nothing wrong with aging. When you stop aging, that's a problem. But all these older adults want to stay in their home. 9 out of 10 people want to age in their home, and they want to stay connected. You know, they're lonely. And so throughout history, that's always come from family, just like I was doing. But here's the statistic a lot of people hadn't looked at, which is the number of family caregivers over that same three decades is dropping by more than half. Mm. Families are just smaller, yeah, and more dispersed, and they're stretched, you know, having kids later and sandwiched as I was feeling. So
we are very used to being matched to people and to service providers over the phone. There's almost no category of our life in which you can't match someone. It could be a love connection. It could be someone to clean your gutters. Right. How does that connection work on NeighborForce?
So at NeighborForce, you know, we built it, and it scares people when we say this is an Uber-like model, because this is not Uber, but it's that idea that, you know, if you just need a backup an hour or two here or there, and sometimes last minute, maybe you're at the office and your parents call, we're using technology to kind of mobilize all of these people in the community that don't really want a full-time job or even a part-time job. They don't want to go work for a home care agency, but they would love to step in if they're available and kind of be that backup son and daughter. So that's what the technology does. Most of the people who sign up are the adult children looking for help with their parents. But there's some seniors that are calling on their own behalf, and some use technology and some don't, and they are calling.
One of the big differences I can imagine that you run into with Uber is who cares who the driver is? They're just taking you from point A to point B.
Right.
I care who goes into my mom's house to fix her remote control on her television, and I don't want that to be a different person every single time. How do you factor those concerns in?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, you're not picking and interviewing your helper or your caregiver. You have to trust the system. All of the neighbors are fully vetted. And, you know, I've always said I'm going to publish a book one day with their application. There's a paragraph about why they want to be a neighbor. That's what the helpers are called. And they all come with their own why. They've done it with their own parents. They've seen it with their grandparents. Their parents live out of town, et cetera. So they are great people to start with. But our matching system does, if you've got a recurring visit, it's going to give you the same neighbor. It's always going to, if the neighbor that you've had most often, it's going to attach you to that neighbor. But what we also find is because older adults are a little bit isolated, and of course, COVID's only impacted that more, it's actually good to meet more than one person. Everybody brings a little something different to the table, and it's expanding their social network.
How much does it cost?
So it is, in the U.S., $25 for 1 hour. That's less than you pay for your pet center if you, if make that into an hour. And it's a 1 hour minimum. So there's no signing a contract for a monthly service. There's no 4 hour, 8 hour minimum. Literally after an hour, we prorate every 5 minutes. So if you're going to the beauty parlor and it takes an hour and 35 minutes, that's all you get charged.
Now, there are many services that seniors can benefit from. Some, you know, we referenced the TV remote, and some are personal support workers. Like, you actually need someone who's got perspective and training and how to lift you into the shower safely. Sure. Where does the line get drawn in terms of those, in terms of the services that a neighbor can provide?
Right. And that's a great question. And that's something that I thought might have been a little more difficult for the market to get. But we draw the line right at short of what's called personal care. So bathing, feeding, safe transfers, all of those things where you need training. You know, we're helping get the fitted sheet on the bed, you know, making a grilled cheese and tomato soup for lunch, you know, cleaning out the back bedroom because the grandkids are coming to visit, taking a walk, going to the museum, all of those kind of things. Really, you know, like a son or daughter would do. I never wanted to do some of those heavier things for my own mother.
Right. One of the criticisms of the gig economy is that it isn't so great for workers. Like Uber Eats doesn't pay very well, and the service takes a big cut from the restaurants, which the restaurants complain about. How do you address that?
Yeah. So our neighbors, on average, they're working 4 hours a week. Hmm. So they view this as, in many ways, paid volunteerism.
Right.
If it's a neighbor who really needs 20, 30, 40 hours of sustained income to pay their bills, this is not the right answer for them. We have school teachers that do this on top of, you know, their primary income. So, you know, in that way, they don't obviously feel like they're being taken advantage of. By the way, our average client is using us 4 hours a week. And studies show that as little as 4 hours a week can keep you in your home. You know,
yeah, I believe it. I believe it. That's, you could do all the light bulbs in a house in
exactly.
an hour, right? There are so many concerns about fraud against seniors for good reason. They're vulnerable. How do you protect against that?
Yeah. So a couple things, obviously everyone is fully vetted through our application process, interview process. And then we do, you know, the full spectrum of background check and we pull their driving records and so forth. But the other thing I tell people, and I'm sure we're going to have a bad actor at some point, but, you know, you have fraud when you've got a full-time worker, probably underpaid, in the home of a sick client. You know, that's a tough 8 hours or 24 hours, and you're not hands-on. So they're asleep and you could be sneaking around in the dining room. Our neighbors, I mean, this is everything they're doing together in these visits, which average just over 2 hours. They're doing it together. And it's fun. You know, we say our company's inspired by joy. So we're really bringing that positive energy to our clients. And that's what we want to leave them with.
Well, let our conversation be the first you have when you decide to expand to Canada.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Paige. I appreciate your time today.
Appreciate it.
Paige Wilson is the founder of NeighborForce. It's kind of a little bit Uber, connecting community members with older adults who need a little bit of help around the house. Great idea. Stay with us. Coming up next on Moolala, Lindsay Kent will be here. She is the founder of the Pop-Up Chapel Company. We're doing all sorts of wacky topics on this show today. It is a pretty unique wedding planning service. And our blogger spotlight this week is going to focus on a blog called Freedom 35. The author, Liquid Independence, which is a very like Deadmau5 DJ name. If you have missed an episode of the show, do not worry. There are so many ways you can catch up. You can go to any of the podcast platforms, but you can also go to moolala.ca, and there you can search by keyword. So if there's a particular topic that you're interested in, all the recent interviews that, well, all of the interviews, not even the recent ones, it will show up and you can choose from that, the buffet of content there.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
This pandemic has reset expectations in almost every area of our lives. Weddings, you just can't have them like you used to have them. And that is a body blow to traditional venues and traditional service providers. But it could be, this rethink could be an opportunity for some upstarts, right? There's one called Pop-Up Chapel Co., and it's offering a unique experience for couples looking for a simpler wedding without all the hassle. Lindsay Kent is the founder of the Pop-Up Chapel Co., and she's here to tell us more about how it works. Hello there.
Hi.
Is anyone planning a wedding these days?
You know, aside from the Pop-Up Chapel, I own another wedding planning company, and there are still some people brave enough to plan, and kudos to those individuals, but it doesn't look like it used to look right now, and we're not sure when it will.
Yeah. Now, your model is very interesting to me. It seems it's kind of Uber Airbnb-esque. There's like a marry six couples in a day sort of Moonies aspect to it. How do you describe what your company provides?
So at the Pop-Up Chapel Co., we're a shared wedding concept, very much like, you know, it's the wedding version of the sharing economy, very much like Uber or the Airbnb of the wedding industry. And what we do is we marry 10 couples in one day, one couple on the hour, every hour for 10 hours straight. And that's how I describe it. I also say that it's an inclusive and sustainable and affordable alternative option to eloping at City Hall. It's not just, you know, this kind of shotgun sort of novelty experience. It's actually a really beautiful, intimate experience that is that couples enjoy, that's a bit more elevated than eloping to City Hall.
I love the concept and I hate the concept in the very same breath. So I love the efficiency of it. I love that it's new. I think that's great. The thing I don't love about it is my fear that I'm going to be standing up at the altar and I'm going to be about to utter the most important vows of my life. And you're going to be at the back of the room going, next, like that.
No,
does that happen?
No, not at
Speed
all.
Speed it up there. No more tears.
No, every couple really does enjoy the space to themselves. And we've married nearly 200 couples in the chapels now. Wow. And not once have we received feedback from anyone that it felt too rushed. Each couple gets a 15 to 20 minute ceremony on their own. And then they have about a 40 minute cocktail hour. And we have it so, we have our process like down pat so much.
How do you cattle prod people out of the venue? People would not leave my wedding.
So there's a separate space where people are held in advance, and everyone who comes in, they know what they've signed up for. So it's not like they're expecting to stay there for 5-6 hours. They know that they've got an hour in the space. And one of the most important things that we do is we tell them, you know, the process beforehand. And when we tell them that it's time for them to move on, they understand and they know. Most often they have plans for afterward. And our photographer really helps, because at the end of a couple's hour, our photographer will take our couple away to do a portrait session. And that sort of like, once the couple's out of the room, their guests are like, meh, what's the point of being here anymore?
Right.
You know?
Now, how much does this cost?
Well, it really depends on the venue and the location, but our packages start at $2,600 and they go up to $3,200. So it's, you know, in between there.
Yeah. So like a tenth of what the average couple spends, if we use the $30,000 marker here, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot deeper. Yeah.
Now, I make the joke about Sung Young Moon and the Moonies and marrying multiple couples at the same time. I see online you did this event in 2019. It was six stellar couples, as you called them, at the Berkeley Bicycle Club. Now that you've explained, they're not all in the room at the same time.
No.
How do you ensure that it is a mise-en-scène that fits for what these couples want? Because so many brides and grooms and brides and brides and grooms and grooms obsess for months about whether it's an orchid or a gerbera, and they don't have that choice in your format.
Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. When you opt to get married with the Pop-Up Chapel Co., a part of that experience is the spontaneity and is the uncertainty around what it's going to look like. And you have to be comfortable with that. And that's something that we communicate with our couples up front. Like when they're walking into the space, they do not know what it's going to look like, but they have followed us for a long time. They've seen our portfolio. They've seen the level of the work that we do. And when they buy in, they buy in. And that surprise is part of the experience. For most couples who opt to get married this way, they don't want to, you know, kill themselves over the details. They don't want to stress over the details. They want to show up. They want it to be simple, and they want the decisions made for them. Mm. All of that being said, there are a couple ways that they can completely customize their experience. So for example, the flowers that they hold or the flowers that they wear, they have massive input into that by sending us the color scheme that they want and inspiration images. They're also able to choose the music that they walk down the aisle to. They also have a big say in choosing the type of vows or if they want to write their own vows. So we do give them opportunity to personalize, but we also give them the simplicity of like literally showing up to your wedding.
Is the officiant the same for everybody?
We work with one or two officiants each chapel day.
And what's the charitable component?
So every time a couple buys a spot for the chapel, at least $300 of their chapel spot will be donated to the charity that we partner with for that specific chapel. Every single chapel has a charity that we partner with, and the charities span all different kinds of charitable segments, from helping, you know, sick children to charities that work on the environment to charities that work with the homeless. Every single chapel usually raises anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 for that specific charity. To date, I think we've raised nearly $60,000 through our chapels.
And why was that an important part of the model for you?
To me, the wedding industry can at times be superficial. There can be a lot of familial or societal pressure, and there's not a lot of opportunity in our industry to use what we do for a living to really make a meaningful difference and to give back. And once I became a mom, that was really important to me. And I was just like, I got to do something deeper with my life. Like I got to use my talents to make a difference. And so that has been a big value of the chapel since I started it. And I, for as long as I own and run the chapel, the company, that will be a value of it.
My now husband is a theater director. So there was a lot of theatricality in our wedding, a lot of creativity that a lot of people don't have. Like they go to the same event space and they do all the same stuff because they just don't have that creative mind. And they were at a wedding and they like that thing, so they just do it again. What is the single biggest creative element that would have that couple's experience be different from the 24 weddings that they went to the prior summer that were virtually the same?
Well, first and foremost, our aesthetic is definitely left of center. So if you look at any of the work that we've done with the chapel before, the visual and the design behind it is definitely very bold, very funky, usually quite colorful. And so first and foremost, like people's jaws usually drop when they walk into the chapel because it is just not a typical wedding. And honestly, that's one of my favorite things about the chapel. There isn't one client that my design team has to answer to. So we get to try new and bold and different things. And I know for a fact that every time people have walked into the chapel, I hear over and over, oh my gosh, I've never seen this before. I would have never pictured these colors together. This is really beautiful. This is really bold. And so I think that that's part of the one thing that really makes them feel like it's never anything they've seen before or never a wedding they've attended before.
I'm not going to make you choose a favorite, but I am going to ask. I'm good because you work in lots of different venues and you've been in every venue probably in Ontario, but your business is more than just Ontario. What is an example of a venue that you think captures the kind of character or serendipity or uniqueness that you're really gunning for?
Well, there's a couple. I mean, right now we've worked at Brickworks so often here in Toronto, and we have just a wonderful relationship with them. And I feel that their space is very malleable to whatever we want to do in terms of the design, which I love. I could say the same thing about the Globe and Mail Center. Honestly, I could say the same thing about many of the venues that we work in. We're working at this really cool brewery in Winnipeg called Nonsuch. And it is just so rad. The design that they have in there is already super cool. And I can't wait to see what our team does with it. But I think for me, and this is going to sound cheesy, but the thing that really makes the chapel different for me, it's actually like the couples that we get to work with. I find that I cry like 3 to 4 times every single chapel day.
I swear to God,
I still cry. And it's because the couples that are coming into the chapel, they don't really care about the pomp and circumstance of a wedding. They just really want to get married and are super in love. And the intimacy that that creates and the joy that that creates and the energy that that creates in the room is palpable. And I really think that that is the special sauce of what we're doing at the Pop-Up Chapel Co. We're really giving everybody and anybody the opportunity to have a really stunning, beautiful wedding. And the energy that they give us in return is something that after a decade in the wedding industry is truly something that I've never experienced on that level.
Wow. Well, that's a perfect place to end, Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I mean, really, the only reason I had you on the show was because your weddings are a tenth the price of the average. And here you're bringing up all these gushy thoughts of love. So, that's a bonus. No, I'm kidding. We think about money in a very holistic way around here. And this is a perfect story. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Lindsay Kent is the founder of the Pop-Up Chapel Co., a really interesting model that takes the sharing economy and sort of lays it over the wedding industry. Stay with us. Coming up later, our blogger spotlight is the Freedom 35 blog. I wonder what he would think about hosting a wedding like that. But first, Michael Meyer is here to talk about his life planning app called Oblix, O-B-O-L-X. It's pretty cool. If you would like to stay up to date on all things Moolala, it's a very simple way to do that. You can sign up for our newsletter. So you go to moolala.ca, you sign up for the newsletter. Once a month, literally once a month, I send a newsletter with links to all the stuff that I have done in all these different places, CBC Radio, CityLine, BNN, Bloomberg, SiriusXM, blah, blah, blah. And so that'll keep you abreast of what's going on in the world of personal finance. And I will not do anything with your email address other than send you that newsletter once a month.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
No one can predict their financial future, but you can plan for it. You can factor in many of the circumstances that life might provide as it unfolds. One of the things that can be really helpful is to visualize your future. And this new life planning app caught my attention. It's called Oblix. It factors in wealth milestones, but also some potential health milestones too. Michael Meyer is the founder, the creator of this Toronto-based company. He joins us now to tell us how it works. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. Thanks for having
me. There are about a million financial planning apps out there. Maybe it's like 1.1 million. I don't know. There's a million. There's so many. This one caught my eye because of her use of a timeline. So for anyone under the age of 30, they know what a timeline looks like. They might have even edited video themselves or audio themselves. Right. And that's the simplest way that I could use to describe what the application looks like. Tell us more about that visual. If it weren't radio, you'd show me. You can't. Sure. So tell me.
Sure. I think that's, you've kind of hit the nail on the head. The design was inspired by editing software, the way you would edit music or a video. And, because our target is, everything is on a cell phone now, it's something that you're able to create your timeline, add other members of your family to the timeline. So what you end up with is in fact a stack timeline. And that's something that you're able to edit and play around with on a small screen in a way that's very, very easy to understand and easy to adjust. So that was really important for us in how our users would interact with that. And it's a really interesting shift. I think we've seen, you know, as guys like us move from, you know, say Excel in the workplace to the home, we see this movement of many types of software that were first initially adopted for workspace. So, example, project management software and, you know, kind of complex editing software really made easier later on and adopted by households. And that's kind of where we're at with Obelix.
The name comes from the Egyptian monument. Why that metaphor?
Sure. Well, we use kind of both meanings for that. The obelisk originally, if you look at the shape of it, it looks like a child's drawing of the sun, what the rays of light look like around the sun. And that's because the Egyptians worshiped the sun god. And later on, those obelisks were moved and they were placed in places of great importance and to kind of measure milestones and essentially marked places of importance for other cultures, the Romans principally initially. So we use a combined meaning there, and the app really is to light up the milestones of your life. So that's why we chose the name, and we use the graphics as well. We use the obelisk shape to mark these important events in your life.
The user inputs their birth date. Do you have the mortality tables determine our death date, or do we get to say we're going to live to 150?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, if you want to live to 150, the good news is it's more within your control than your genetics. A lot of people assume that it's their genetics, but the good news is that you do have a lot of control over your health decisions in affecting your healthy life expectancy and your life expectancy. So we initially populate it with, as a female or male born in this year from this region, we know what your healthy life expectancy and your life expectancy is going to be. So we initially populate it with that data, but then we get you to drill down and you can personalize it by going through a health quiz. And that will then give you an output such as your biological age. You will know if your body is if you're 40.
I'm basically 22 in that regard. Okay. Well, maybe 23.
That sounds right. So then you've got, the good news is you got a long time to live and a lot of time to do the things that you want to do, which is really the other part of it is this idea that time is a constraint. And so when you understand what time you have and how that lines up with the rest of your family, you can start making some of those decisions. And it's not kind of always the very, let's just call it unfun, some of the unfun financial part of it. A lot of it is the interesting things. How can I do the things I want to do and when do I do them?
When you took me through the demo before this conversation, you showed me that you put your spouse on there, your kids on there, but also your mom. Right. And stacking it was really helpful because you could see here is the window in which we can do these things. And after that window closes, it may be that we simply can't do those things before. Can you give us some examples of some of the conclusions that people can draw when they've got the visual right in front of them?
Sure. I can say to you, I'll give an example of if there's three friends of yours and you're trying to decide, hey, we want to go and do something. It may seem like there's an infinite amount of time for that. By the time you really overlay your calendars and you decide who's going to be where, then the choices get a lot narrower. So the same way, if I'm thinking of, there's a time when my kids are going to leave for university, I'm going to want to downsize my house. I'm going to want to then look for a house, in a kind of southern state, perhaps get some more sunshine. So when I do things, it sounds like I've got kind of this just my future as this, every year up there is equal. But really, there are some pivotal years where there are, bottlenecks, if you want to say it, when certain things are going to happen. And if you really want to do something, you should kind of consider the other factors that are involved. And it really spits out then some very defined, again, we'll go back to time as a constraint. It's really helpful to see that. It really makes things kind of happen in certain times. And it also allows you to have a discussion with your partner, because once you see this timeline, your partner's input, your children's input, even your parents' input, you can all have a discussion about it. And that's also really helpful, the discussions that flow out of these intersections.
When I tried it, I was hesitant to put my data in, right? You and I hadn't spoken. I wasn't sure how that data would be used. In the future, do you see this as a standalone product, or will it be incorporated inside of an existing financial relationship that one has, like with a bank or a brokerage, where they've got a lot of the data and you're just, you know, adding in your mortgage?
Right. So I see it as something that is essentially a portable and dynamic plan. You know, in the future, you may have multiple financial institutions that you're dealing with, in terms of real estate and your investment portfolio. And it's also something that you may want to involve some different advisors. You know, it's not just an investment advisor, it may be a tax advisor.
My psychic, my astrologist, correct. My massage therapist.
Correct. So by you taking control of that information and being able to keep it current, you're able to, you're able to seek advice from different experts. And I think that's an interesting, the portability of it and the collaborative nature of it, I think is interesting. And also that you control your data. I think a lot more people are want to be able to have a place where they can sync and hold their data together in a way that is easy to analyze.
One quick question before we go. A traditional financial planning experience would include some assumptions around investing and savings and how long your money's going to last. Does this timeline also illuminate when your bank balance goes to zero?
It does show you when it drops down. So you see, you know, as you plug in at 62 or at 65 or whatever the retirement age you choose, and you start plugging in your withdrawal amounts, what you'd like to live on, it shows you both your retirement, how that's going to decrease your retirement funds, but it also shows you how your home equity is increasing. So there's a time when, you know, in terms of the industry problem, it's decumulation, you know, how you want to be strategic about that, because a lot of the focus is on your retirement portfolio, but for most Canadians and most North Americans, in fact, they have a lot of wealth in their home. So at some point you can make that transfer, and that is also illustrated within the app. So it does demonstrate for you what your forecast is looking forward to and at what point you may have to consider, delving into that home equity.
Interesting stuff. I wish we had more time. I'm going to point listeners to OBOLX. Oblix, it's spelled OBOLX. A new life planning app. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Michael Meyer is the founder, the creator of Oblix, which is kind of a cool way of visualizing your financial and physical health with some key milestones along the way. Stay with us. Coming up next, our blogger spotlight is going to be focused on a blog called Freedom 35. Yeah, it's a thing. Written by Liquid Independence, which just sounds boozy to me. I don't know. If you have comments or questions or feedback on the show so far, our email address is ask@moolala.ca. ask@moolala.ca. Listen, books, I've written a couple books. If you want to get them from the library, the first one is called Moolala, Why Smart People Do Dumb Things With Their Money and What You Can Do About It. You can also order it online from anywhere, but libraries are good.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
It's time for our blogger spotlight. So this is when we highlight some of the amazing personal finance bloggers across Canada and around the world. Today, our guest comes from Vancouver, British Columbia. The blog is called Freedom 35. Our guest is Liquid Independence. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
I can't help having a smile across my face when I mention your name, and I understand you blog anonymously, and that's fantastic. I want to know how you came up with your nom de plume. It sounds very boozy to me.
Well, I did some research early on in my early 20s about how investing works and what's possible with personal finance. And I decided, the age 35 would be a pretty good goal to set for myself in order to reach financial independence.
But what about the liquid part? Is that like, are we talking Jack Daniels or are you talking liquidity, which is infinitely more boring, by the way?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but you know, being liquid is all about being fluent and being able to change your mind, which I think is a sign of very successful people.
Oh, so when have you had to change your mind? Was there something about your personal finance journey that that had you do an about face?
Yeah, many times. Like one of the first times I changed my mind was about mutual funds and high fee funds and things like that. And I decided to change after doing that for a while to self-directed investing and then basically choosing my own investments.
One of the things that struck me in how you describe what you do in your journey is you acknowledge that you've got a lot of debts. You got about $500,000 in debt, but you say you have achieved financial independence and you did that just last year. Mm-hmm. How do you connect those two things? Because there would be some people would hear that and go, he's not independent. He's got to have $1 million in debt.
Well, I think the amount of debt you have is also dependent on how much assets you have, because if you have a lot of assets and relatively low amount of debt compared to that, then your net worth or financial situation is still in a relatively good place. So I think debt is a tool that you can use to leverage your investment gains and not necessarily a bad thing to have.
No. And I think what I like, you write about there's no such thing as good debt and bad debt, which I would agree with. I think we need to take the morality out of it. And there's mm-hmm. a difference between the level of interest on different kinds of debt. So a mortgage is practically free these days. A credit card is practically debilitating these days. How did you come to the notion of using debt and leverage to forward your financial goals?
Well, I mainly did some studies on other people, like billionaires who have also used debt. And it seems like using like controlled debt, particularly cheap debt, like mortgages, like you said, you know, lots of people made their millions doing real estate by leveraging. Also, margin debt these days are pretty cheap as well. So as long as you have a controlled situation where you can manage your debt, I think it's worth looking into.
You have passive income that can occur in lots of different ways. Some people do it through income properties. Some people do it through dividend exchange traded funds. What is your approach?
A little bit of both of what you said. So I have dividend income coming from dividend growth stocks that I have in my portfolio. I've also accumulated some rental properties. So I have rental income coming in as well. So that helps both ways.
And when you say financial independence, do you still work in a conventional way or have you pulled the plug on that?
I'm still currently working right now. I think I'll go for another year or two, but my wife and I are financially independent right now. We just like to, get out there and then we like the socialization part of working.
Yeah. Even in a pandemic, we still like to have some sort of thing to show up to for a mm-hmm. bit. What do you think can be easily reapplied from your approach and what's harder?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I don't know if there's any generic financial advice that would go for everybody, but I think the best thing people can invest in is really not any particular specific asset, but it's probably their human capital. In other words, they should invest in themselves and see what kind of opportunities are available, what kind of advantages that they have, what kind of like idiosyncratic advantages they have that they can use for themselves to better their personal finances.
Mm, that sounds like you're eliminating plastic surgery from that equation. You mean other things?
Yeah.
Liposuction does not count. Doing a course in, I don't know, passive investing would be on the mark.
Yep. It's not for everyone, but it's definitely something to consider.
Now you post some criticism about your blog on your blog, and it mostly seems to be about your approach to leverage. People have raised concerns about your approach to leverage. What are those concerns summarized, and what's your counter argument?
Well, the concern is that I have basically too much debt, too much leverage. My counter argument is just look at your personal situation. For me, it makes sense. Businesses use leverage to get ahead. People use leverage to buy real estate. And they, you know, if you put a 20% down payment, then you're borrowing 80% of the value of like one of the largest assets that you will ever own. And, you know, nobody bats an eye on that. But if you use like 50% margin, then, you know, people go crazy. So you just have to contextualize everything. And I think that way it makes things a little bit more easy to understand.
You're young, which is fantastic, but it also means that you have not lived in a high rate environment. You don't have that lived experience of what it's like when people had to pay 18% on a mortgage. Mm-hmm. What happens when rates rise? It's not going to be in a year, but it certainly could be in a decade.
Right. So I have a stress test that I do, similar to the large banks, where if the economic environment changes, like interest rates go up or we have higher inflation, I have tools in place, and I can do certain things like sell stocks or sell one of my properties, just have different mechanisms that can alleviate some of that pressure when it comes. So having a plan ahead is very helpful with that.
In some ways, I was surprised to see you writing about Bitcoin because it seemed to be a bit off the mark. Tell us about your experience with Bitcoin and your choice to start playing that game again.
Yes, the Bitcoin story is one of speculation. And because I'm financially independent now, I do have some play money that I can just throw into things. And maybe it'll go up 10 times, maybe it'll go to nothing. But having that privilege, I think, really does help me to find these sort of outside of the box investments that I can play around with.
Does it keep you up at night seeing the crazy volatility, or are you good?
No, I'm good. I think it's a very long-term investment for me. So I don't look at the price on a daily basis, but it's also only like 2 or 3% of my whole net worth. So it's not a big loss, even if I lose everything in it.
Right. So we kind of talked a bit about investing and the choices that you would have needed to make in order to free up the cash to invest. Tell me a bit about how you think about spending and, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah, well, my parents were very frugal, so I learned from them growing up to be thrifty, to be mindful of where I'm spending my money. I do all of my cooking at home, even before the pandemic.
And, I mean, we all do our cooking at home now. Oh, right, prior to the pandemic, got it.
Right, and I just try to save money where I can, but also make sure that I spend money on the things that I do value.
Given your name, Liquid Independence, have you ever like spun for Deadmau5 or any of the other major DJs of our time?
No, I haven't really thought about it, but you know, once I quit work, maybe that's a new career path I can consider.
That'll be the thing. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for having me.
The blog is called Freedom 35. Wow. And our guest was Liquid Independence. I just love that. Nom de plume. That is it for our show today. If you'd like to stay up to date on all things Moolala, our newsletter can be found at moolala.ca. At least that's where you sign up for it. The other thing you can subscribe to is the podcast itself. You can go to any of the podcast platforms, click the little subscribe button. And while you're there, please leave us a review. It helps on what's called discoverability. I am the money columnist for CityLine. You can go to cityline.tv and check out some of those segments. I also have a monthly column on BNN Bloomberg. So I'm like yakking about money all the time. On social media, at Bruce Celery is my handle on Twitter. Bruce Celery Moolala is me on Facebook. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great rest of your day.